Arizona's sports station. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up, 2 o'clock on this Monday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Happy Monday, Gambo.
Burnsy, how was that deodorant working yesterday? Were you sweating that out during the NCAA tournament?
My deodorant?
Yeah.
I was...
Is that working good?
I did...
What's the starts with a P? What's the other word it's called?
Antiperspirant.
Yeah, was that working well?
The deodorant is just for the smell. I'm like, do I smell?
Antiperspirant. Yeah.
At first, I was kidding. Was Sarah
yeah,
wedding,
I was like, where is he going with
sweating,
this?
Sweating that out. Sweating it out. They waited until the final bracket to put ASU in.
Yeah,
like,
I got the feeling once they announced the first three regions, I'm like, oh, playing game. They're a playing game. They're 11 seed playing game. That's what it's going to be. That's what we've been talking about.
But I was worried about, you know.
Not in at all?
Yeah, like NC State or somebody. It was a lot of teams on the bubble. You know, and everything I was reading was like 5 teams for 4 spots or 6 teams for 4 spots. And ASU was one of them.
Yeah.
And then first 3 brackets go by, they're not in. And you're like, oh, God, I don't know if they're going to get in.
It was a little nerve-wracking, to say the least. Let's tell you what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Going deep. Today's top story, Burns and Gambo.
The Sun Devils are going dancing for the second straight year.
Although I did hear Bickley and Murata talk. I think it was Bickley who hates the dancing part of it.
No.
So they literally played every dancing song possible. Whitney Houston's Dance With Somebody, Dance the Night Away, whatever.
Dance.
A little bit of Let's Dance from David Bowie, I hope.
Yes.
Yeah, I hope there was
any song with dance in it. Just
are you opposed to the dancing? Does that bother you?
It doesn't bother me that, you know. No, they were going over things that bug you. The biggest thing that bugs me is Grand Slam home run and you can only call it the big game. The big game. You know that football on Sunday, that big game. I hate the
movie. Oh, like when the lawyers tell you can't call the Super Bowl.
I can't say the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's just so stupid.
I could live with the dancing. They're going dancing. I could live with it.
Bobby Hurley this morning on Doug and Wolf. Are you getting nervous towards the end of the selection?
Well, yeah, I mean, there were certain teams on the 10 line and the 11 line that I thought that, you know, we might have, you know, outperformed them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Top to bottom, just with our season, and it just didn't go our way with some of those selections. And then when I saw immediately that we weren't in one half of the play-in game, and as they go through brackets, done, and you're in this is your last chance,
right.
It gets a little dicey.
Yeah, I was kind of feeling the same way. You ask about my antiperspirant. It was working okay yesterday, but I was nervous.
Yeah. Like, are you guys worried right now? Because I was.
When they were 3 down, when they were 3 regions down, I thought, okay, they're either they're a 10 seed and we overestimated how concerned everybody should be, or they're in the play-in game. I mean, it's one of the two. And so when those names started popping up, didn't surprise me at all to see them in the play. I was fairly confident they were going to get in, but it was a little nerve-wracking yesterday. Yeah, no doubt.
You know, I'm just going to say this. I really thought going, like, after they had, lost to Washington State at home, and we were like, oh, my God, this is a terrible loss. And you started to talk about what they needed to do. You know, down the street, they did lose a game on the road to Colorado. But after that, like, it almost like it didn't matter, right? They beat Utah. They beat Stanford. They beat Cal. They lost to Oregon. They beat Oregon State. They beat Arizona. They beat UCLA. Like, it almost like none of that matters. It was like, no matter what they did, they were a bubble team because of what they did earlier. I really felt that way because after the Washington State game, okay, what do I got to do to get in? They did finish strong. They won a lot of basketball games.
They won
6 out of 7. Going into the last game of the Pac-12 tournament, they had won 6 out of 7 games, and it almost feels like none of it mattered. None of it mattered. You were a bubble team. That's all you were. You couldn't afford to lose any of those games. You probably would have been out.
That part of it mattered, because had they lost, then we're not talking about ASU in the tournament.
But we thought
at
like
all.
If they won, they would solidify. Okay, they're in. They're comfortably in. They're a 10 seed. Maybe they could get up to, you know, they won their, you know, they won their first tournament game. I mean, they took care of business against UCLA. They won the game. Oh, then they lost in overtime to Oregon, who ended up being the conference champs. I almost felt like, yeah, if they would have lost one of those games out of the 6 out of 7 that they won, they might have not made this damn tournament. But winning all those games did nothing but keep them on the bubble. Yeah. They were on the bubble and they stayed on the bubble.
It's a fair point. I do wonder, and after the selection show was done yesterday, I wondered if you could go back in time and Remy Martin doesn't get hurt and ASU wins that game against Oregon, are they not a first four team? Just change that one thing. And I don't know the answer to that. I'm just speculating, hypothesizing. If they beat Oregon, because at that time Oregon had a better net rating than ASU did, it would have been a nice looking win for ASU on the resume. That one win, that one loss, was that the difference between a first four game Wednesday in Dayton, Ohio, or between you're in and you're playing on a Thursday or Friday as a 10 seed or a more solid 11 seed, one that doesn't have to play a play-in game? I don't know. I bet had they won that game Friday night, they're in and not instead of 1 foot in.
The lesson to be learned here, in all honesty, is don't have quad four losses.
Oh, yeah.
Don't freaking lose to Washington State or Princeton.
Yep.
Like, don't lose to Princeton
Amen,
at home.
Brother.
Like, that's it. I mean, that's all. Quad one, quad two, quad three, quad four. That's the death quad, quad four. It's the death. You're playing one of those teams, you got to fire your team up. You got to get them ready to play, and you can't get beat. Because it's death. It's like ASU had a good season, but they had two crappy losses. All right, to quad four, to losing to Princeton and Washington State. And it's almost like the lesson to be learned with this new system is, my God, you can't lose to that team. You cannot lose to a team like that. I don't care what you have to do. You could lose to other teams, but you can't lose to that team.
There's no doubt that that is what, I mean, look, you look at the team they're playing in the play-in game, St. John's, they don't have any losses like that.
No.
St. John's doesn't have any really bad losses like that. In fact, that Princeton team that beat ASU here, the Johnnies handled them fairly easily, I think, if I remember the final score, right?
They beat them by 15.
Yeah, so it wasn't it that is the lesson to be applied here. You cannot lose to those games. So it's back to Dayton. It's back to the play-in game. Bobby Hurley, again, on Doug and Wolf today, was asked if the experience there that they had a year ago losing to Syracuse in the play-in game is some kind of an advantage.
I'm not sure. I mean, we have a, you know, our roster's changed so significantly, as you guys know.
Yeah.
You know, from last year's team, just how we were built, and I'm sure that Remy and Kamani and Romello could draw off the experience. But it's you know, it's special to play in the NCAA tournament. As you know, it's an honor to play in it. We're just really enthusiastic to get out and play. I mean, I trust this team to really go play against anybody, you know, anytime, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever day they wanted us to play, we're going to be ready to play.
And that's, Gambo, the big question I had after what went down yesterday. Okay, back-to-back tournament appearances for the first time since the early part of the Reagan administration for this program.
Wow.
Okay? You have to go back to 1981 to find the last time ASU made the tournament in back-to-back years. On the one hand, that is something to be celebrated. On the other hand, because it's a first four game, because it's a play-in game, is it something to be celebrated, or is it something?
I think it's something that just, it's in the record book. They made back-to-back tournament appearances. Like, you've made the NCAA tournament, but me and you kind of feel like this play-in game, unless you're playing on Thursday or Friday. If you don't get to Thursday or Friday, I don't know that many people care about the Tuesday, Wednesday games, you know? I just don't know that we do. So, but the reality is, did they make the NCAA tournament last year? Yeah. Did they make the NCAA tournament this year? Yes. Can they say this is the first time they've been here in back-to-back games since? Yeah. St. John's. Like, they haven't been to the tournament in a while, too. This is their first since 2015. So, like, if they win that game, it's going to be their first win since they beat the Lumberjokes back in 2000. St. John's hasn't won an NCAA tournament win since they beat the Lumberjacks.
You know what? I remember that game very well. Did not the Lumberjacks take the St. John's?
Yeah, it was a five-point win. I mean, it was a 2-against-15
seed.
They were so close to knocking off the Johnnies in that game. I remember it
I had
very
literally
well.
Bet Mark Asher on that game, and if NAU had won that game, I was going to have to put on like an NAU cheerleader's outfit.
Oh, that would have been great.
Yeah. Because I was so confident St. John's was going to kill him by 30.
That would have been.
Your legs would look amazing.
Yeah.
In a cheerleader ensemble.
Absolutely.
That was the bet. I was going to have to dress up as like an NAU cheerleader.
Would you have waxed the legs? Would you have shaved the legs?
No,
would you have...
I'm a guy's guy. I'm not a metro. I don't do that
stuff.
You
wouldn't have done something to kind of clean up in the leg area if you were wearing a...
Zero.
No, nothing like that at all. That's too bad. No. That would have made it even better. Sarah, I was waiting for. I thought Sarah was going
to
jump in.
I have nothing to say.
Self-restraint.
That's good.
I will say this. This was my favorite team as a kid growing up. My best memories in college basketball is St. John's. The 1984 team with Chris Mullin and Walter Berry and Mark Jackson and Bill Wennington. That team was amazing. Louis Carnesecca, that three teams from the Big East made the Final Four. It was the year Rolly Massimino and Villanova shut it down and slowed it down and beat Georgetown in the final. Georgetown got to the final by beating St. John's. There were three Big East. It was the heyday of the Big East. And I used to go to those Big East tournament games with my friends because for $8 we could sit there and watch the Big East tournament all day long. And Chris Mullin was my favorite player, and they were loaded. I mean, Mark Jackson, Bill Wennington, Chris Mullin, Walter Berry all went to the NBA. So when I was a kid growing up, that was literally one of my favorite memories of being a kid, was that basketball team in 1984 that made it to the Final Four.
Yeah, so you will be rooting for St. John's Wednesday.
Yeah. Listen, people ask me, I root for ASU. I want ASU to win against every team in the country except that one, just that one. That's it. Everybody else I want them to beat. But that one was, that's a lot of memories for me.
Won't be breaking any ASU stories then in the next year or so, right? Pretty much.
If they win, I'll root for them to beat Buffalo.
Okay. And you know what? It's funny. It's funny that you say that. We'll talk more about this coming up in a little bit. Some of the advanced projections suggest ASU might be a decent bet to advance to
those
next
Wednesday
round
teams,
after Buffalo.
Those Wednesday
teams.
Well,
yeah, we'll get into that in a second. Those Wednesday play-in games, oftentimes they advance into the next round beyond the next one that they get in. So we'll see if that's the case. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Suns got the win. In reality, it was kind of a gift, and it sets up kind of an important matchup for tonight. I'll tell you why next on the Burns and Gambo show.
So Jackson will inbound. They get the ball to Booker. Booker throws it out to Josh Jackson. His three. Shazam! Josh Jackson.
That's why you always foul, ladies and gentlemen.
That ties the game.
They don't have a timeout. That's got to be a technical this time.
Al McCoy, Tim Kempton. Sounded even funnier on the New Orleans side of things.
A second maybe off the clock. Got a foul. Why haven't they fouled? Jackson for the tie. Why didn't they foul? 1.1 to play. Am I missing something here?
Well, that's Kevin Calabro. He is a fantastic play-by-play guy in the NBA.
Was he a Seattle guy?
Yes, yes.
He was a Seattle guy. I remember him. He does a good job.
Kevin Calabro is one of the best. Is he with the Blazers now, or is he? Okay.
Yep, he and Lamar Hurd do their games.
Oh, he is great. Kevin Calabro is.
Alvin Gentry can't survive after Pelicans' mind-boggling meltdown against the Suns. Here's how the New Orleans Pelicans came away with the most improbable of losses. Pelicans meltdown versus Suns left Alvin Gentry trying to explain bizarre sequence. In watching that game, there's a lot of things that could have happened that would have prevented Alvin Gentry from being in that situation. And trust me, I feel really bad for Alvin Gentry right now, like really bad. Two missed free throws in the final 15 seconds. Two different players missed free throws. That would have sealed the win. They had a five-second violation. Couldn't get the ball in bounds. They didn't foul Josh Jackson on a three. And then Alvin Gentry called a timeout with 1.1 seconds left when they didn't have one. The game was going overtime. Called a timeout. They didn't have it. Booker hits a free throw. Suns win the game. How they won the game, the New Orleans paper was saying that they don't know if Alvin Gentry can survive this. It was just a brain lock. Just an absolute brain lock. He was calling for the foul of Josh Jackson because they had fouled before. They had fouled, I think it was Booker, right, before that.
Yeah.
So they had two fouls to give. They gave one, and then he was calling for the foul. And then nobody fouled Josh Jackson. Josh hits the three-pointer, and he goes out there, and twice he calls timeout, not realizing he doesn't have a timeout. But I think he realized earlier he didn't have a timeout on the inbounds play. Because on the inbounds play, you can't get the ball inbound. If you have a timeout, you call a timeout.
Call a timeout so you don't get the five-second call, right?
They weren't able to call a timeout on the inbounds play, and they had to turn the ball over.
And he fell on the sword. He being Alvin Gentry fell on the sword about it after the game on Saturday.
Oh, I called it. That was my mistake. That was on me. I called the timeout. We didn't have a timeout. That's where the technical came from. So I thought we had one left. They said we had one left. We didn't have one left, so that's all on me. I'll take the hit for that.
Now, we're unabashed Alvin Gentry fans here on the Burns
Absolutely.
And Gambo show. We loved his time here
with
the Suns.
If they fire him, bring him back here in some capacity as the assistant, head lead assistant, I'd Love for him to be back.
I'd hate for him to lose his job over something like this.
Might lose his job because they're going to bring in a new, you know, basketball operations guy, and they're going to fire the GM. They're going to bring in somebody else. So he could lose his job over this. He might lose his job just anyway because they're going to go in a different direction. You know?
Right. No, that's kind of the point I was going to make, was it's probably going to happen anyway because they're going to go in a completely brand new direction there. Either way, Suns are now 6-4 in their last 10 games. Booker had 40. Oubre had 32.
Booker had 40.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know how many times? I think that's the 12th game this year of 35 or more points for Devin Booker. 12 times over 35.
His numbers since the All-Star break have been fantastic. Fantastic.
Not surprised.
He has put up unbelievable numbers since the All-Star break.
He's a great player.
Yeah. This is the stat I was looking for. I took a screenshot of this. Devin Booker versus James Harden over the last six games. Booker is averaging more points per game, rebounds slightly to Harden, I should say. Assists are dead even. Booker's averaging more free throw attempts, is shooting better from the floor, shooting better from three-point, shooting better from the free throw.
There's only one thing I have to say about that, and that's all great. But there is a big difference when you're playing on a team that has nothing to play for compared to a team that has everything to play
for. Valid point. Very valid point.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Yeah, that's fair. That's
Kelly Oubre was fantastic in that game. He was sensational with 32. No Kelly Oubre tonight in the game. No Tyler Johnson tonight. No T.J. Warren tonight. So they're without a couple of, and no Rashawn Holmes.
Yeah.
Really shorthanded tonight.
Yeah, it's Oubre's out with a thumb sprain, Tyler Johnson with the knee, Rashawn Holmes with the quad, TJ Warren with the ankle that has sidelined him for 20-plus games now. It's an unusual set of circumstances tonight because you're playing the Chicago Bulls.
Who are they playing tonight?
They are playing the Chicago Bulls tonight.
And what does that mean for the Bulls?
Bad news for the Bulls!
Bad news for the Bulls!
Yeah! Except they're missing Kelly Oubre and Tyler Johnson and Rashawn Holmes and TJ Warren.
They're going down tonight.
I'm
going to the game tonight.
You look very fancy schmancy today. There's no doubt about it. It's a very interesting game because as of right now, the Suns at 17-54. Have one of the three worst records in the NBA.
What was the franchise worst record?
Oh, they passed that.
Oh, we're good.
All right. Yeah, it was 16 wins.
There it is.
They're done with that.
That was important to you.
It was. It happened when I was gone on vacation, but I did. I think I toasted my cup of coffee the next morning. Hey, we're not the worst team ever in the history of the Suns
organization. You put that French vanilla stuff in that coffee?
Nope, I drink it black, baby.
Just black?
Just black coffee.
No sugar?
No sugar.
No milk?
Cream, no nothing. Just black coffee. Chicago is it 19-52 on the season? They have the fourth worst record in the league. Now, two games better than the Suns. Now, when you get down to where Chicago is, your chances of getting the number one overall pick drop from 14% to about 12.5%.
Not a crazy difference.
Not a crazy difference.
The top five teams all still have relatively similar chances. The top five.
Okay. I'm just going to throw this out there because I know the answer to this, but it has to be asked.
No, they're trying to win.
Because I didn't know Kelly Oubre was hurt.
They're trying to win.
But when did Kelly Oubre get hurt? At what point in that game on Saturday night did Kelly Oubre? Because I don't want to call anybody a liar. I don't want to do that. I just don't recall him being hurt in that game. That's all. I want. You to be right.
They've won 6 out of 8.
They look 6 out of their last 10. They look like they're doing everything they can to win basketball games. And that's what I want.
They are winning games.
That's what I want. I'm not rooting for tanking. I'm not rooting for resting guys. I just, given the matchup, I had no idea Kelly Oubre had hurt his thumb in that game Saturday night against New Orleans. That's all. It surprised me to see Tyler Johnson. I knew about.
Right.
All right. TJ Warren, right. Obviously, I knew about. I didn't know Oubre was hurt, and given the small margin between these two teams as it relates to ping pong balls and whatnot, I was just surprised to see that Kelly Oubre wasn't going to be playing tonight.
Yeah,
I
was too, but I mean, I don't think this team's trying to win basketball games. I mean, they beat the Lakers, they beat the Heat, they beat the Knicks, they beat Milwaukee, they beat Golden State, they won New Orleans. I mean, they're trying to win basketball games. But you know what? If you got a guy that's hurt, then there's going to be a big investment in Kelly Oubre coming up. in the offseason. Probably a big $15 to $20 million investment.
Sure.
So you also got to err on the side of caution. If this was a playoff game or a game to get them in the playoffs, I'm sure Kelly Oubre would be able to suck it up and play. But since it's not, and you are going to put a big investment in this kid, you probably don't want to get him hurt if he's banged up a little bit. So it changes. It changes everything. You're playing for something. This game means the world. The difference between getting in the playoffs and not, you know, some of these guys might play. They might play. But when you're not going anywhere and you got guys that are hurt, it doesn't pay to play them. Why do I want to risk you getting injured further if the game doesn't have any meaning? That's just my opinion. I mean, I think they're trying to win basketball games. I don't think they're holding guys out to lose games.
And I want to be clear, I'm not even trying for a second to suggest that they are doing that. I just thought it was unusual because I didn't know Kelly Oubre was bothered by a thumb injury. In tonight's game, if you look at the upside-down standings, it's kind of a big game in the upside-down standings. But I'm with you. I don't want them to lose anymore. I want them to do everything they can do to try to win. And even if that costs them ping-pong balls, so be it. So be it. You've angered the basketball gods enough as it is the last few years with trying to lose games. Don't try to do that anymore.
You know, last year, right, you could make a better argument to lose the games. This year, with the odds relatively similar.
Yep. March Madness tips off this Thursday, and with it comes your chance to be the Arizona Sports Bracket Boss. It's presented by Sansan Ford and Schwartz Laser Eye Center. Text the word BOSS to 620-620. Sign up. Get your bracket. Compete for your shot at $1,500. Again, that's BOSS. It's a 620-620. As a group, they've been the joke of college basketball all season. But now that they got three teams into the dance, is there redemption down the road for the Pac-12 Conference? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter Poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Sarah Cazell standing by with today's Twitter Poll question of the day, at least right into what our topic is here at 2:30. Hi, Sarah.
Hello, hello.
What do you have for us today?
All right, guys. There are three Pac-12 teams in the men's NCAA tournament. Which team goes the furthest? Right now, maybe it's because we're in Phoenix, but 39%. Of our voters say ASU will go the furthest. 32% voted for Oregon. 21% said all three teams will lose their first game. And then only 9% voted for Washington.
More people thought all three would lose their first game than are voting for Washington.
Yep. About double.
Ugh. I haven't filled out my bracket yet. So
I have not either.
I'm not sure who I think is going the furthest yet. I tell you what. A lot of the national,
like ASU people, over Buffalo, if they could beat St. John's,
potentially,
right?
And right. A lot of national people think Oregon is a very good looking 12 seed. A very good looking
12-5 upsets,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely,
12-5 upset.
The way they're playing right now, with as hot as they've been, that Oregon is a very good looking 12 seed. When it's all said and done, that's the poll question. You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page at Burns and Gambo. On Twitter, where you can interact with the show. Sarah Jordan, they run the account. Our poll questions, some of the things we're talking about, you can all find it there on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page. How badly does the Pac-12 need, forget about winning a game, getting into the next round, a Pac-12 team in the Sweet 16, how badly does this conference need that to hang their hat on right now?
This conference needs a jolt somewhere, somehow, by somebody. And they didn't get it last year from U of A. Last year, a lot of people had U of A winning the whole thing.
Yep.
I mean, they did with Alonzo Trier and with DeAndre Ayton. They had a team that was, looked built to win. And they got their asses handed to them by Buffalo, you know, in that first game. And at Pac-12 overall has just been a disaster. I mean, three teams. You look at the conferences, okay, the Big Ten, they got 8. The ACC, 7. SEC, 7. Big 12, 6. Big East, 5. Pac-12, 3. Like, it's the most pathetic conference out of all of them. It's a joke. Like, it really is. I mean, Washington's a 9 seed. That's your regular season conference champions, a 9 seed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not even one of the, like, that's like being like a 30, somewhere between a 32nd and 36th best team in the country.
And there are some people who are arguing whether they should be seated that high.
Yeah.
They haven't beaten anybody.
Oregon doesn't get in unless they,
nope,
they win the conference tournament. And they did. They shellacked Washington in that game. And they're a 12 seed, and then ASU's in a play-in game. I mean, the conference is bad. I was looking at the John Wilner column. He said, Oregon's a winner. Ducks got the best possible news with the number 12 seed in San Jose on Friday after playing four games in 4 days. You know, their seed was less significant than the short flight, extra day of rest and home region placement. So they got a little bit of an advantage being in San Jose. They're going to have a lot of support, you know, in that place against Wisconsin. And he says they're a threat to reach the Sweet 16. He thinks they're a winner. Washington, he says, is a loser. The Huskies were seeded as high as they could have hoped, given the paucity of quality wins, their first NCAA appearance since 2011. But the draw is brutal. A first-round date with Utah State, which won the Mountain West, and then number one North Carolina. So that's a loser. Now, he does have Arizona State as a winner. Says the Sun Devils waited until the last first four pairing was announced. They were the penultimate?
Penultimate means second to last.
You know, these big-time writers, penultimate. Didn't you used to be a writer?
You never wrote words like penultimate?
Never.
Penultimate is a fantastic word and one you should add to your vocabulary.
I'm going to use it. It's the penultimate. So that's second to last?
Second to last, basically. Mm.
So instead of always the bridesmaid, never the bride, always the bridesmaid, you could just say you're always the penultimate?
Probably not, but you know what?
Because penultimate would be an adjective, not a noun, so you can't do that.
I don't know what an adjective
you just,
seriously, you just waded into some serious...
So let's talk about syntax.
I don't know what an adjective...
The thing about preterite is...
Or run-on sentence, I don't know. Anyway, to my point, he says, with a victory, Devils would play Buffalo, which bounced Arizona last year, but he says that they're a winner. Three teams in the Pac-12. You're hoping somebody makes noise. But even if somebody does, here's the reality. Pac-12 needs an overhaul. Football and basketball, it needs an overhaul. The conference is really suffering right now. We've talked about football. The biggest region that they draw from, California, is losing football players on a regular basis. Less and less kids are playing football in California. It's not affected in Florida. It's not affected in Texas. But in California, you're seeing about a 10% decline in kids playing football. Kids are going to other sports. Other sports are increasing. Football's decreasing. The Pac-12 has an identity crisis right now.
Sure.
A major identity crisis. And nothing that happens in this tournament is going to change that.
No, and I think two things that can help the Pac-12 in its identity crisis. Number one, they got to get the situation in Tucson figured
out.
That's first and foremost. They got to figure out if Sean Miller is the coach. Can Sean Miller be allowed to continue to be the coach? Because if he is, that's an elite program that will continue to recruit elite players and make the Pac-12 more elite. Number two, they have to hire somebody worth a damn at UCLA. That is a premier program. It's a premier job in America. I read a story from Wilner last week, who said, you need to go get Tony Bennett out of Virginia. And when he says no, you offer him a million more. And when he says no, you offer him a million more. Offering him $1 million per year until he says yes, because you need to hire somebody who will raise that brand back to the level of what it needs to be. Because this conference needs UCLA to be great. Needs UCLA and Arizona to be great, because they're the cornerstones of what was, in the past at least, a decent basketball conference. Then you combine that with what Washington's doing, what Hurley's doing with ASU, Oregon's kind of in and out. Then maybe you kind of have a little bit of a Pac-12 revival going on.
I mean, you look at football. I mean, two guys last year, Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold, got drafted right away. You know, top draft picks out of the Pac-12.
Sure.
This year would have been Justin Herbert. Next year it will be Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
Hey, just who signed a big deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars? Nick Foles, former U of A guy. I mean, there's a lot of successful quarterbacks in the league that are coming from this conference, but they're just not winning anything in this conference.
Back to ASU. They're in the same spot they were in a year ago. The play-in game on a Wednesday night. Last year they lost to Syracuse. Bobby Hurley today said he believes his team is better suited to advance this year.
I just think we have a lot of winners in the locker room, and we're more athletic and have, you know, more ability to score in the paint than we could last year. The guards were terrific, and we just couldn't get the balance that we now have, you know, at both ends of the floor because of just being bigger and more athletic.
Now, their game Wednesday night against St. John's, you'll hear it here on 98.7 FM.
They have one of the best guards in the whole country.
Yes, they do.
They really do.
This stat you're going to hear a lot of, and I don't even know if it's a stat, it's just a little factoid between now and Wednesday's game. Exactly one team from the first four has advanced to the second round every year since it began in 2011. In 7 of the 8 years, it has been the team that has won
on
Wednesday night. And some of those teams...
Why would that be?
I have no idea. Syracuse last year went to the Sweet 16. Tennessee is an 11 seed in 2014, went to the Sweet 16. LaSalle in 2013, as a 13 seed, went to the Sweet 16. I don't know why. I
it's got to be just a coincidence.
You get the extra day? Is it because you're, but how do
but
you know
you
when your season
day,
ends?
You lose a day in preparation.
Well, and you don't have as much time to prepare for whoever you're going to play in the actual first round of the tournament. Yeah, and for ASU, if they win in Dayton, it's hop on a plane, fly to Tulsa, where they would play Buffalo, which, by the way, Seth Greenberg thinks that not only is ASU going to win the play-in game, but...
I actually like Arizona State to win their play-in game, and I like Arizona State to beat Buffalo.
Basketball Power Index on ESPN says there's a 26% chance that ASU does beat Buffalo. Thinks it's one of the more predictable first-round upsets of this tournament if they get in.
We've been saying this all along. We have no idea what the hell they're going to do when they get to the tournament because they are heckle and Jekyll, man. You don't know if they're going to shoot the ball well. You know, if they're going to not shoot it at all, it's a very difficult team to gauge, ASU. It's a hard team to gauge. You just don't know. I mean, Aaron Knight's that they just can't shoot. They've got size. St. John's has no size. Their tallest player is 6'7". Shamari Ponds is an NBA player. He'll get drafted. He'll play in the NBA. He's good. So you'll have to deal with him, and that'll be a Remy Martin situation. But ASU has some size that St. John's doesn't have because St. John's just doesn't have that. But... you know, St. John's has some big wins. You know, they've beaten Villanova. They've beaten Marquette a couple of times. They've got some primetime wins in the Big East Conference, which is a better conference than the Pac-12.
Tomorrow is Ticket Window Tuesday. It's presented by Arizona Central Credit Union. We're giving you the chance to win a pair of tickets to see comedian Aziz Ansari on March 26th at Comerica Theater. We'll also throw in Peoria Sports Complex spring training tickets as well. Listen, it's 7:15. 10:15, 12:15, and 4:15 for your chance to win. He's a journeyman quarterback, now on his seventh team, but are there dominoes in play with Ryan Fitzpatrick going to the Miami Dolphins? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Is he the quarterback that is good enough or bad enough for the Miami Dolphins to decide they don't need or want another one in 2019? That is the question that Cardinal fans are probably asking themselves about Ryan Fitzpatrick right now. Signed a two-year, $11 million deal with the Dolphins.
They're not happy in Miami.
Well, why would they be?
How Fitzpatrick signing could cost the Dolphins a shot at a top draft pick in 2020. Yep, that's the big story in the Miami paper right now. Can they possibly bungle the easiest step of the tanking rebuilding process, being bad enough to secure the best quarterback in the 2020 draft?
Are they saying that Fitzpatrick is too good?
They think he can win him a couple of games.
Wow.
They would rather have, you know, Mike Glennon.
So Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't obvious enough for them in Miami?
Here's their point. Not a single team that won four games this decade secured the number one overall pick in the draft. And over the past 30 years, just one of 70 teams that finished with four wins secured the top pick. It doesn't happen. They're saying if he wins four games, they're not going to get the top pick. Now, here's the thing that I would say. There's three bona fide stud quarterbacks projected right now in Fromm from Georgia, Herbert from Oregon, and Tagovailoa from Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Three that are projected to be surefire top five picks in the draft next year. You got to get one of them. But in a Miami paper, and I was reading the Miami Herald today because I wanted to see what they thought of it. They kind of feel like, they said, keep in mind that in three seasons as a full-time starter, Fitzpatrick's teams won 6, 6, and 10 games.
Wow.
They think he'll be just good enough to not let them get the top pick.
I was not expecting that take out of Miami. I would have thought that they would have looked at Ryan Fitzpatrick and said, yep, that's exactly the type of quarterback we need to sign.
Could they have done worse?
Oh, they could have done worse.
RG3.
So I guess that's
Mike Glennon.
And that's their point, is that they should have done worse.
A.J. McCarron.
Blake Bortles. Yep.
You could have done worse.
Fitzpatrick has had some success. Enough.
He's not good, but he's probably not bad enough for you to win to go 2-14.
Yeah,
and what you want to do is you want to go 2-14. You want to be a 2 and you want to get the number one pick, so you have your choice. Now, I still think no matter what, they'll probably not win enough games to not get one of the three quarterbacks. They'll probably get one of the three, but it's very unlikely that they're going
to
get.
Yeah, but to their point, Fitzpatrick is too good for them to win to lose enough games.
Right.
For them to finish with the number one pick in the draft. I mean, even the NFL.com story I read suggested, I mean, this is the league-owned website, suggested that Miami is doing what it can to lose enough games to make sure they get Tua Tagovailoa like next year. I mean, this is coming from NFL.com, so it's out there enough that people are trying to figure out what they're going to do. Look, for us here in town, we're trying to figure out if the Dolphins are even in the market to A, want to try to move up in this year's draft, or B, sign Josh Rosen, trade for Josh Rosen, should the Cardinals make him available.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because in the Miami Herald, they said exactly what you're saying. If they somehow end up with one of the quarterbacks in this year's draft, then the signing of Fitzpatrick is justified because, you know, losing enough to draft a quarterback would no longer be a priority.
Right.
It wouldn't be a priority because you'll get your guy this year.
And honestly, that's my first reaction when I saw the Fitzpatrick story was exactly that. Okay, Fitzpatrick has proven himself. He's not a starting quarterback in this league. All right, he can do it in spurts. He can do it here, there, but you don't want him long-term, right? He's a classic backup quarterback, probably making classic backup quarterback money.
That guy's made, see what you said.
I looked it
for
up
being,
today.
For being an average to below average quarterback your entire career, this guy's made a lot of dough.
In his career with the Rams, the Bengals, the Bills, the Texans, the Jets,
seven teams,
and the Bucs, and now the Dolphins.
Go over the teams again.
All right. It is the Rams, the Bengals, the Bills, the Titans, the Texans, the Jets, and the Bucs. Ryan Fitzpatrick, not counting the two-year, $11 million deal he signed with the Dolphins, because I don't know if he'll see that to the end or not.
I do not remember him with the Rams.
$58 million for Ryan Fitzpatrick in his career. He's made $58 million.
I have no recollection of him playing for the Rams.
And you don't?
He was there Cincy, Buffalo, Houston, Tennessee, the Jets,
he was there
Tampa.
For 2 years.
I don't remember. I do not remember him playing for the Rams.
I don't either. I'm just looking at it. It's right here in front of me. His estimated career earnings. He didn't make a whole lot of money with them, but he was with them. Yeah, wow. He was with 50. So if he sees this contract through its completion, that'll be $69 million Ryan Fitzpatrick has made in his NFL career. Now that is living right. A backup quarterback, right? You're get some glory every now and then. You always want to be the starter, and sometimes he's been the starter in some of these places, man. But a career as an NFL backup quarterback in this league where you've made $60, $70 million
Eli Manning has now made more than any player in NFL history.
You mentioned that last week. Eli I was Manning. Not aware of that. Yeah, you mentioned that the other week.
Like $260 million or something crazy like that.
Vontaze Burfict has been cut by the Cincinnati Bengals. I read on Twitter from Rappaport, Ian Rappaport. On the day Vontaze Burfict is released and available, the Raiders are already doing homework on some linebackers. They might have interest in Vontaze Burfict. I also read the Vikings might, because Mike Zimmer used to be the defensive coordinator in Cincinnati, and the Browns, given that they've taken a lot of chances on guys like Vontaze Burfict, might be willing to throw their name into the hat as well for Burfict now that he's available.
Do you remember when Vontaze Burfict was coming out of ASU and one of the first mock drafts had him as a number one, as a first round draft pick?
I do.
And then he fell like all the way, was he seventh round or undrafted?
Undrafted.
Undrafted. Fell all the way out of the draft. Now, this guy, three times he's been suspended. He's been banned. He's, you know, violated the league's drug policy. He's been suspended for hitting defenseless players, multiple violations. I mean, this guy's not a rule follower.
No.
You know, he's not a rule follower. He is a very undisciplined player. But there are guys out there that like him, that like the way his style and the way he plays.
In December, we get so focused on Vontaze Burfict, the head case, right, with all the suspensions that you mentioned a second ago. In December, he suffered the seventh known concussion of his NFL career. I didn't realize he had that many. That we know seven that we know about. All right.
I guess when you play like that.
Right. When you're a head hunter, sometimes your head is the one that is going to be hunted, right?
Yeah.
Your head is the one doing all that damage. It's going to cause you some problems. I'll be curious to see where he lands, if anywhere. I mean, there was a while there for as much terror as he induced on the football field, when he could control it.
He was great.
He was great.
No, there's no question.
He was a freak out there when he could control it. He just never could control it.
No. And he's, you know, for him to go from being a guy that was projected to be a first round draft pick to not getting drafted. And anyway, he's made some money. He's had like a $30 million contract. He's made some money in the league. I mean, he was really a true success story because he was an undrafted kid that ended up having a career in the NFL.
And in a retirement announcement that one day Larry Fitzgerald hopes be as cool as.
This one's good.
Haloti Ngata announced his retirement from the top of Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa today. He wrote an Instagram post and he held up a big sign on top of the mountain in which he said, I've climbed this mountain to announce my retirement from the NFL or
so
something along
those
lines.
Where is this mountain in
it's in Africa.
Africa.
I don't know where in Africa it is.
I've heard of it. Mount Kilimanjaro.
Yes. I don't know where it
Mount
is.
Mount Kilimanjaro.
It's in the Toto song.
is Haloti Ngata blessing the rains down in Africa? Yeah.
Specifically in Tanzania.
Does it say Mount Kilimanjaro in the song?
Yeah, I believe there's a line
does
about
it?
Mount.
Just Kilimanjaro. He doesn't say Mount. It's just Kilimanjaro. Yeah.
I bless the rain.
We'll sing it for
Africa.
You later. Yeah.
Toto, that was a great song. That was an 80s song.
Spectacular song.
It was a spectacular song. It is amazing. It's funny
how
you said
it's going to top that.
This generation that Sarah is, you love that song. I don't know what it is about people in you. I mean, because I grew up on that song. There is something about that song. It's enjoyed an unbelievable renaissance to people in their 20s.
Do we love it more than your generation loves it?
I don't know. I love it. It's one of my favorite 80s songs of all time.
It's a good song.
But there are people in Sarah's generation in their 20s who love Toto's Africa.
Don't love Weezer's new cover.
Yeah, Weezer's
terrible.
New cover. Everyone's ripping it. The original Toto Africa, people in their 20s just dig.
Trying to see if it says Kilimanjaro in there. I don't
in the lyrics it does. Yeah, it does.
It does say that, huh?
Yeah, I promise you it does.
Oh yeah, you're right. You're right. As sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I become.
And then the boom, 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 then the drums, right? Yeah.
Take a lot to drag me away from you.
The coaching matchup's going to get most of the headlines.
100 men or more could ever do.
But what type of team will ASU be facing in St. John's
in
the play-in game? We're going to go to New York to find out next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
I know that I must do what's right. Sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus.